Yuga Ante. At the end of every four yugas. Satya, Dwarva, Treta, and Kali. Kali na. In due course of time. Rastan. Lost. Shruti Gunan. The Vedic instruction. Yatha. As. Tapasa. By austerity. Rishyaha. Great saintly persons. Apashyam. By seen misuse. Yatada. Where from? Dharmaha. Occupational duties. Sanatanaha. Eternal. Translation, at the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, reestablish the principles of religion. You can repeat. At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, we establish the principles of religion. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. In this verse, the words Dharma and Sanatana are very important. Sanatana means eternal, and Dharma means occupational duties. From Satyuga to Kali Yuga, the principles of religion and occupational duty gradually deteriorate. In Satyuga, the religious principles are observed in full, without deviation. In Treta Yuga, however, these principles are somewhat neglected, and only 3/4 of the religious duties continue. In Dwapara Yuga, only half of the religious principles continue, and in Kali Yuga, only 1/4 of the religious principles, which gradually disappear. At the end of Kali Yuga, the principles of religion or the occupational duties of humanity are almost lost. Indeed, in this Kali Yuga, we have passed through only 5,000 years, yet the decline of Sanatana Dharma is very prominent. The duty of saintly persons, therefore, is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to reestablish it for the benefit of the entire human society. The Krishna consciousness movement has been started according to this principle, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, 3rd Chapter, Text 51. Kaler dashanithe rajanasthye ko maham guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha param vrajet. The entire Kali Yuga is full of faults. It is like an unlimited ocean of faults. But the Krishna consciousness movement is very authorized. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who 500 years ago inaugurated the movement of Sankirtan, Krishna Kirtan, we are trying to introduce this movement according to superior orders all over the world. Now, if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by reestablishing Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupational duties of humanity. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. Jivera Sarupohoi Krishnera Nityadas. This is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means Nitya or eternal, and Krishna Das means servant of Krishna. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. So, Chaturi Yugante Kalena Grastan Shrutikanam Yata Tapasarache Upashyan Yato Dharma Sanatana. Om Gana, Tumananda Shah, Gyanjana, Slakaya, Jaksuru, Medikam, Yena, Tasmai, Shigarve, Maha. So, several things I'd like to talk about here. First is, it's not loud enough? It's really loud to me. Does anyone else have a problem?
When you do the kirtan, you're loud, but when you start speaking, you soften your voice up, so it changes.
Okay. So.
But you don't speak like that normally. You protect your voice like that.
Okay, I won't. I'll try to be calm. So, wait a minute. For me, it's really loud, because I don't have any ear damage. So, anyway, several points here. The first point is the use of the words Sanatana Dharma. Of course, as Prabhupada mentioned, Sanatana means eternal. And Dharma, of course, Prabhupada here translates as occupational duties. And really to unpack that particular statement, the word Dharma comes from the root di, which means that which sustains something. In other words, as Prabhupada would often say, that quality which cannot be separated from a particular object. And Prabhupada, of course, gave the example, the typical example is water, which has liquidity. And water, when it's in unnatural state, of course, that's called ice, that's unnatural, at least in India, apart from the Himalayas. Water that's in unnatural state, that's not its dharma. The dharma of water is liquidity. Another example Prabhupada gave is the dharma of fire is heat. So these are qualities that are connected with a particular object. So the qualities that are connected with us are many-fold. Of course, the primary quality, which is called Sanatana Dharma, is what? Jivera Sula Bohai Nitya Krishna Das, the Prabhupada states here. That means we're eternally servants of Krishna. And then there's secondary dharmas that are connected to us, and that's in relationship to Varnashram Dharma. Varnashram Dharma, the word Varna actually means color. And it's not in reference to the color of one's skin, it's in reference to the color of one's qualities and work. As Krishna states in the Gita, Chatur Varnam, Mayashastam, Guna Karma Vivagasha, that one is known to be a particular caste or a particular ashram according to his qualities and work, not according to his birth. So this is, the word dharma can be used in a temporary context or a time-bound context such as in Varnashram Dharma or in an eternal context known as Sanatana Dharma. So in any case, both of those dharmas have been lost in this Kali Yuga. And Kali Yuga is quite an interesting time. Let me talk about Kali itself. Kali is actually a demigod. According to the Mahabharata, Kali is called the worst of all the demigods. Yeah, louder?
I'm getting text from online.
Well, maybe the volume here needs to be reduced. Because it's almost painful to me here.
It's
the same.
I go
just
to the
computer.
But when you listen in here, it's actually not
I'm just in the downstairs in the
TV box. Yeah.
And this cheap little one, and I heard you fine.
Okay.
It means people.
That's your cheap iPad. So, anyway, so, yeah, because it's just, my ears are very sensitive, and if it gets too loud, it's hard on me. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So, Kali is considered to be one of the demigods, and he's called the worst of all the demigods, which is interesting. He has a specific function, and Dwarpa is also one of the demigods. He has his challenges too. So you find some references to both of them in the Mahabharata. One story is the story of Nal and Damayanti. And I'm not going to tell the story of Nal and Damayanti. But basically, in this particular story, Nal, who happens to be a Nishada, a good guy, and he loses in a dice game, and those dice were actually, Dwarpa and Kali. Interesting. And then also in the main story of the Mahabharata, of course, you have Duryodhana and Shakuni, who are considered to be incarnations of Kali and Dwarpa. And so they're creating all these problems. You may ask, you know, why are they considered to be demigods if they're doing all this stuff? Well, the reason is that they're carrying out the Lord's plan, because the Lord's plan is to have the ages gradually degrade like that from one to the other. And the four principles of religiosity are gradually being lost. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have this very interesting story of Maharaj Parikshit encountering the personality of Kali. Very, very interesting story. Maharaj Parikshit, of course, is a great devotee of the Lord. He's called Vishnu Ratha, who was saved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, while he was within the womb of his mother. And Maharaj Parikshit is coming from a fantastic family. You know, he's actually the grandson of Subhadra and Arjuna. So he's protecting religious principles. And of course, his son, of course, Maharaj Janamajaya later on, is also another very famous personality. So everything's going well in his kingdom. And Prabhupada, when he's discussing these particular verses, and his purports it also in the classes, he describes how Kshatriyas, they like to have a challenge. So there's not so many challenges at this particular juncture for Maharaj Parikshit, because everything's going well and everyone has surrendered to him, and all the other kingdoms have actually accepted the supremacy of Maharaj Parikshit. So then he hears that there's some religious activities going on in his kingdom. And so Prabhupada said he becomes very enthusiastic. Not because of the religious activities going on in the kingdom, but because he becomes enthusiastic because of the challenges. This is actually a very chivalrous mood that we mentioned previously that Kshatriya has. Kshatriya does not have the mood, I simply want to fight and kill everybody. Sometimes people have that misunderstanding. I remember there was one, several times it's occurred, that people have children that like to fight and beat up all their other friends, and the parents think, this is what a Kshatriya is, and my child is a Kshatriya. But that's not the quality of a Kshatriya. Kshatriya means to protect others, specifically becomes very enthusiastic to protect religious principles, Dharma. So Parikshit Maharaj is very enthusiastic. Now, wow, there's an opportunity to show my martial arts and to go out and protect society. So he goes out, and as he's going out and going all over his kingdom, he discovers there's a bull and a cow who are having a conversation. Actually, Prabhupada said in his purport, it's very interesting, that nobody else could see this bull and cow. Only Maharaj Parikshit could see it, because it's described as it was mystic, because of his mystic vision, the mystic power. He was able to perceive what was going on in the conversation between the bull and the cow. So the bull was actually standing on one leg, and he was urinating. And the cow was lamenting. And the bull was asking the cow, you know, why are you lamenting like this? And the cow is asking the bull, why are you standing on one leg, urinating? So Parikshit Maharaj comes, and he actually asks the bull, who has done this to you? Who is responsible? Who is the dacoit, or who is the evil person who has cut off your legs? The bull responds in a very interesting way, not pointing out the perpetrator, the immediate perpetrator of the act, but actually giving different philosophical explanations, saying that, you know, some people say it's the material nature. You know, he's actually talking about, he actually presents all these different Vedic philosophies, like the Karma Mimamsa philosophy and other philosophies that are not, even the philosophies that are not bona fide. But he doesn't present it as his philosophy, he just presents it as some people say this, some people say that. And because he is ultimately understanding that whatever has happened to him by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he doesn't blame the immediate perpetrator, who happens to be the personality of Kali, who we mentioned before is one of the worst of the demigods, or the worst of the demigods. So he doesn't point that out. And in fact, it's pointed out in this section of the Bhagavatam that one who blames the, let's say, external cause, that he's just as culpable as that personality is. In other words, karmically culpable, because he's taken an atheistic stance, thinking that something is happening without the jurisdiction or the approval of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's very interesting. So as soon as Parikshit Maharaj hears this explanation given by Dharma the Bull, he says, you are actually Dharma the Bull, because you have understood religious principles. And he, of course, at the same time, does capture Kali, and Kali is actually, because he's not actually, going back to the story a little bit, he's dressed up as a Kshatriya, in other words, administrative head king. And this is the problem. He's a low-class person is dressed up as a higher-class person. So immediately when Maharaj Pariksit captures him, Kali gives up his dress. It's described, he gives up his dress as a king and appears as he actually is. And then, as a coward, because a king, he wouldn't be a king, because a king, or a Kshatriya in those particular times, would never surrender. Would never, like, fly the white flag and say, I surrender. It's described by Srila Prabhupada that a king would either die or win. And there's a very interesting story that Prabhupada tells in this regard. He said, once upon a time, there was a king. And he went to fight a battle, and he did win, and he came back, you know, I guess he just left the battlefield or something like that. And he came back and he wanted to enter his palace, but his wife, the queen, wouldn't let him enter the palace. I guess she didn't lower the drawbridge down. And the reason she gave was that you could not be my husband, because you have not either lost, died, and you have not won. So my husband is not a coward. And this interesting quality of a Kshatriya is illustrated in many different places. Even Ravan, when he is fighting with Lord Ram, at one particular juncture, he's taken off the battlefield by his chariot driver. And he gets so angry, because he's fallen unconscious, and he gets so angry at his chariot driver that he's almost ready to kill his chariot driver. He says, how did you do this? You're an unworthy chariot. And the chariot driver gradually explains, Prabhu, you were unconscious, so therefore I had to take you off, you know, to save your life. And then he sort of forgives the chariot driver. But he has this spirit that for one who is has some fame, then to be blasphemed or infamy is worse than death. That's a Kshatriya quality. That's the mode of passion. Because the mode of passion is pride. And so, if you had some position as a Kshatriya, or if you're challenged, that's why a Kshatriya always responds to his challenge, that's why a Kshatriya is challenged to a gambling match, a Kshatriya responds, or a Kshatriya is challenged to a fight, a Kshatriya responds. So, but a Shudra doesn't respond, and a Brahmin doesn't respond, and a Vaishya doesn't respond. That's how you can tell some of the Kshatriya. You challenge them to something, challenge them to a match, and they have to respond, whatever it is. whether it's arm wrestling or gambling, or if it's Balaram's appearance day, drinking honey like we used to do. I mean, it's just like we have to, or Sankirtan, whatever. Sankirtan marathon. It's like Kshatriya. And Prabhupada wanted the Kshatriya spirit, actually. Prabhupada very much appreciated it when the devotees were challenging each other, and Prabhupada even offered himself up as the prize for winning the Sankirtan marathon. Prabhupada said that whoever comes out first in book distribution, I'll go to his temple and reside there. So this was actually the spirit. So anyway, getting back to the point. So Kali, he just gives up. He surrenders to Maharaj Pariksit. And Maharaj Pariksit, being a bona fide Kshatriya, accepts anyone who surrenders to him and doesn't kill him. It's interesting, isn't it? And he says to him, you should reside. Of course, Kali asks for places to reside. You could reside wherever there's intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meeting. And Kali says, hey, there's nowhere for me. And now, of course, he's everywhere. Because everywhere there's intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meeting. I mean, and all these things are going on. Even amongst many members of the Krishna Conscious Movement, they don't bother to get married when they live with each other. And according to Srila Prabhupada, that's illicit sex. I hate to say that. So, anyway, so then that invites Kali. Or were you gambling? I mean, I've seen some devotees even play the lottery, hoping they're going to make enough money to build a temple for Krishna. Something like that. Or we've seen, of course, I haven't seen too many people take intoxication. Basically, or eating meat, basically, that's not really going on in the Krishna Conscious Movement. So therefore, Kali's given these four places, but if he says to Pariksit Maharaj, that doesn't allow me any place to live, and then Pariksit Maharaj says, alright, you can go wherever wealth or gold is hoarded. And it's not that if someone is hoarding, it's not hoarding, but if someone is keeping some money for a rainy day, that's not where Kali is. In fact, we find that when the Goswamis of Vrindavan renounced this world, they actually kept a portion of their wealth for emergencies, and that's why Rupa Goswami was able to enable Sanatana Goswami to use that portion of his wealth to escape from prison, to bribe the jailer and gradually escape from prison. So the four principles of religiosity, cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. Basically, truthfulness is the only principle barely remaining. And nowadays, of course, if you read the news, it doesn't appear that truthfulness is very much remaining. And then, of course, cleanliness is diminished by illicit sex. And, of course, it's obvious. I don't need to go to a lengthy explanation why cleanliness is diminished by illicit sex. And interestingly enough, it's an intoxication that diminishes the mercifulness. It's interesting, isn't it? Intoxication delivers, and pride, what is it? Austerity is diminished by pride. And the truthfulness is diminished by lying propaganda. So anyway, these are the four legs of the bull. So in our Krishna Consciousness Movement, we have to be very careful to uphold these four different principles, unless we want to invite Kali here. In other words, we should obviously be truthful. And of course, truthfulness is described as, according to the Bhagavad Gita, the austerities of speech, satya priyatam, speaking truthfully, beneficially, and regularly reciting the Vedic literatures, and pleasingly also truthfulness. And truthfulness also means to act truthfully, not to be a hypocrite. So, you know, sometimes we can say, I'm telling the truth, but we're not acting truthfully. Acting truthfully means basically to act consistently with our beliefs, and not to be hypocritical. And so the other principle, austerity, of course, austerity doesn't mean simply some physical austerity, but doing something that pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I was just in New Taliban, and a devotee had heard about the principles of religiosity, particularly austerity, and he began to undergo a fast, thinking this way he would be Krishna conscious, this would be a principle of religiosity. And he got down to under 100 pounds, and he was basically the same height as me. And so he looked like a scarecrow, and the devotees had to rush him to the hospital. So that's not austerity. Austerity, of course, means to accept everything favorable for pleasing Krishna, and to reject everything unfavorable. And that may mean eating a lot of prasadam if you're going to work a lot. Like Prabhupada said, if you're going to work like an elephant, then you can eat like an elephant. But if you're not going to work like that, then better you don't eat like an elephant. So, anyway, so austerity, cleanliness, and of course cleanliness, Prabhupada said, temples should be considered revolutionary clean. I remember they used to have this saying, probably in the Navy, where you should be able to eat off the deck. Right? That means the deck of the ship. That everything should be so clean, the people should come in and say, wow, how clean this temple is. It just like shines. And of course, cleanliness, internal cleanliness, as Prabhupada mentioned during the Brahmin initiation, Yat smaret punarigaksham sabaya avyantara shuchi shi vishnu shi vishnu shi vishnu. Always remembering Krishna, always chanting Krishna's holy names. Cleanliness, mercifulness, and mercifulness means going out and distributing Krishna consciousness, being compassionate to all living entities. So if one exhibits these qualities of dharma, these qualities of religiosity, then our movement will be very much respected, and we'll be able to expand the movement. Of course, if we don't exhibit these qualities, and we just chant Hare Krishna, don't exhibit mercy, cleanliness, austerity, truthfulness, then nobody will respect our society. So anyway, so this is Kali Yuga, the symptoms of Kali Yuga, which we observe every day in society at large, and hopefully we don't observe it in our own society. So any questions or comments?
One question was, you described Kali as the worst of demigods.
Worst of the demigods. The Mahabharata states that, yeah.
So is the personality that Maharaj Parikshit confronted, is that the demigod?
It appears to be, because he's the personality of Kali.
Not a very...
He's considered the worst of the demigods. I mean, like I mentioned before in the Mahabharata, he's like one of the dice in the Nalanda Damayanti story. And he's Duryodhana. Duryodhana. And Shakuni is Dwarpa. At least that's what the Mahabharata describes. And whether that Kali that he saw was an expansion or an empowered person or the actual demigod, I don't know. That's not described. But he's the personality of Kali. And he serves a particular function. What you may say, what is that? What is the function of Kali? You know, why does Krishna allow everything to become degraded? Well, because in Kali Yuga, he gives us one reason. He gives a special dispensation, Kalaya Dosha Nehi Rajan, Ashjeko Mahajvanat Kirtanani for Krishna Shem Mukta Samaparamdaja. That simply by taking up the Sankirtan movement, you go back to Godhead. So he makes things so miserable that one is actually forced to take shelter. Whereas in Satya Yuga, in the other Yugas, I mean, you find that in Satya Yuga, for example, everyone is Paramahansa, but it's not described that everyone is a devotee, pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When things are so nice, when the duration of life is long, when one's health, you know, one doesn't have all these health challenges, then there's a tendency to forget spiritual life. And of course, I often give the example of Hawaii, where there's a tendency to forget spiritual life in Hawaii. I mean, I was a GPC there, and I could say that. firsthand, you know, the tendency during Bhagavatam class to go out and surf, and there's a tendency, anyway, everything is so nice there. So when one's undergoing certain austerities, or life is more difficult, or you see the miseries of material existence, there's more opportunity, impetus to surrender to Krishna. So there's reasons for Kali Yuga. So it's a nice time. Because there's one good quality, Kirtanadeva Krishna Shah, Mukta Sanga, Paramvaja. And in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, I believe, there's descriptions of the various symptoms. And if you read that canto, you'll actually see that it fits present day society very, very well. Like religion is just a change of dress, you know, someone dresses a certain way, the government's exploiting people, marriage will be simply on the basis of sexual expertise, people will live together without getting married. I mean, you see these symptoms, so we have to be very careful in our Krishna consciousness movement not to do these things that are considered to be symptoms of Kali Yuga. You know, we have to be consistent. Let me mention before, that religion is just a change of dress. So we have to be consistent with our ashram. In other words, one's a sannyasi, one's a brahmachari, one has to act in accordance with his ashram, not simply dress a certain way, but actually act in the way that's consistent. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
You mentioned that how Prabhupada encouraged
the
Kshatriya spirit.
Prabhupada what?
Encouraged Kshatriya
spirit. Kshatriya spirit, yes.
Yeah, so, but the other point is looking at the Kshatriya is more of passion. So, my question is, do we actually try to cultivate different modes in different, like, I think in the relationship with devotees, it should be more in one openness, and preaching should be more of Kshatriya.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Prabhupada said, be a lion on the chase, be a lamb at home. In other words, we have to have that distinction when we're here in the temple. Then we have these Vaishnava qualities. In other words, we're Vaishnavas. This etiquette. Even the Kshatriyas, they had etiquette. You know, they enjoyed chivalrous activity. So when someone has that nature, even in the Krishna conscious movement, they should utilize it for Krishna. Like Arjuna, he had that particular nature. Krishna never advised Arjuna to give up his nature, to change his nature. But still observe etiquette. You know, when we have Vaishnava etiquette, that actually takes care of that. You know, even though I may be a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra or whatever, the items of etiquette enable us to have these relationships so we can all work together. And it's very important to study Vaishnava etiquette. Because etiquette means that even though by our nature we may want to do something different, we understand manners. You know, that's a modern word for etiquette. Manners. Okay, a happy note. All glories to the divine grace, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada.